You're listening to the Book of Basketball 2.0 podcast. This is the 2010 Redraftables, which we did as part of a big summer of 2010 podcast that Ryan Russillo and I did. My name is Bill Simmons. This is the Book of Basketball.
Unlike Shaq, Kobe's gonna attack. Larry, she's at three, Kawhi's playing that D. LeBron hits him with that steal, and you already feel. Pass it to Luke, yeah, he's gonna juke, yeah. It's a book of basketball, yeah. It's a book of basketball, yeah. It's a book of basketball, yeah. It's a book of basketball,
yeah. So we're gonna do the 2010 redraftables. You know, we talk about the bad drafts, the 2000, you know, we did the 2006 one was really bad. 2010 doesn't get enough credit for being a horrific draft. It did end up four really talented guys, John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, Gordon Hayward, Paul George. And yet, what do those four guys have in common? They all had devastating injuries, all four of them. Paul George breaks his leg in the Team USA game. He basically misses a year and a half. Hayward breaks his ankle, first Celtics game, basically done for 2 years. Cousins finally finds a good basketball situation in New Orleans playing with Anthony Davis, blows out his ACL. And then John Wall, right when it seemed like he had a chance to put together a really fun career as a meaningful guard, his knees start going on him and now he's probably the worst contract in the league. That's my takeaway when I look at this draft. It's kind of weird. It's like an injury what-if draft. What do you think?
It's bad. It's way worse. Like, I hadn't looked at it in a while, and you're going through it, and you go, this is going to get ugly here at the end. You know, you're just going to be taking guys. I mean, some of the metrics on this, like, Bielise is a top 15 in some of the advanced stats for this class. I mean, it's ridiculous, like, what you're looking at here at the end. Gravis Vasquez ends up having one of the better careers, and he was 7 years in the league, and I wasn't even sure if he was going to go in the first round, and he went at the end of the first round. So there's that part, and then, you know, it's a real big miss with Favors, who I thought had star potential. Evan Turner is really interesting because I liked him so much until everybody else liked him. Like, he was somebody to go, hey, Evan Turner needs to be higher. And you're like, wait, two? Okay, maybe that's... So you go from like liking someone because no one's on him to then not liking him as much because everyone feels like they're on them. But Wall is... You know, I'm not trying to give away the lead here, but as bad as the contract is, as bad as the injury is, I don't know that he can fall below two in a redraft for this class. I don't think he can. And I'd like to still point out that when Wall was right, Wall had that 1 year where he was a top 10 player in his league. Now, he may not have been that just because I think sometimes when we're doing those things, top five, top 10, there's a bit more of a stature to it. It's more than just that season. But in that one season, he was an awesome basketball player. So the injury derails who he is now, but I'm not going to like write off the fact that he's actually had really good versions of himself too.
It's one of those drafts where you just look at it and you go, I wish everybody had taken a different guy after the John Wall pick, right? Evan Turner goes second, but he goes to Philly. And at that point, they already have Jrue Holiday. Lou Williams is there. Doug Collins is there. It's just the wrong team. It's, you know, I think he's one of those rare guys. You almost wish he'd gone to a bad team. So you look at like Jersey's at three, they take Favors. Even if Philly takes Favors at two and Jersey takes Evan Turner at three, I think both of their careers are better, you know, and then maybe Evan Turner gets thrown in the Deron Williams trade, et cetera, et cetera. Cousins goes to Sacramento, where you don't want to go, gets to play with Tyreke Evans on probably the worst run team of the last 15 years. Even if Minnesota had taken him at four, they take Wesley Johnson instead. At least then you get the Cousins, Kevin Love, Ricky Rubio. Like, I don't know. It's kind of fun. And then you go down to Hayward and George go 9 and 10. Utah takes Hayward at 9. George takes Indiana at 10. The Clippers could have just taken either of those guys at 8, and they already had Blake Griffin. They already had DeAndre.
They're a year away from a Chris Paul trade. They have Eric Gordon. And it was that they actually needed a swing guy. It's just they took the wrong one. They took Alfarik Aminu over Hayward and George. And Hayward was, at the very least, if you watched him in college, you're like, all right, that guy's at least 15 a game in college and can shoot a little bit. So I just look at this and I'm like, man, this is a fun one where you just move the names around and everybody's happy.
It's crazy. Like the Paul George going this late wasn't that crazy because he
no, floated. Not in the moment.
He floated. Yeah. And all of his tape, if you watch, it wasn't all great, you know? I do give a ton of credit to John Hollinger. I think Hollinger was like the first guy ever that was like, this guy's going to be an all-star. And I was just like, wait, really? Like, he had been in the league at that point, so that wasn't before the draft. But even Hayward had this weird thing where his 2 years, like his last year at Butler, he didn't shoot the ball that well. But he shot it pretty well the year before that. And that's one of those things where you get a little too caught up in the fact that, like, hey, how come this guy's supposed to be this outside shooter and his three-point shooting numbers were pretty bad? But right. It was just kind of a fluky, like, hey, he can shoot. He had a bad number or a bad year number-wise, so don't worry about it. But him going that late, and, you know, people are going to dump on him now because everything that's happened the last couple of years, but that seems kind of impossible for a guy that just looked like he had all of these skills and the size to go along with it, and it won at a high level in college for a team like Butler.
I took a big loss in this draft, in the draft diary. I was outraged that Indiana took Paul George over Xavier Henry.
Oh.
It's one of my 8 or 9 worst ones, because I'm just like, I'm like, wow, door number A, Xavier Henry, who was like the best high school recruit a year ago and was pretty good in college versus this Paul George guy who's floating around in Fresno State. And it's like, really? You're not taking Henry? So couldn't have missed that one more. I love the Cousins as the upside pick, though. I wrote in the draft diary, sorry to spend so much time on Cousins, but he's the most important 2010 rookie. If he makes it, a big if he makes it, that's the home run pick. You can count the impact under 30 bigs like Cousins on one hand. I mean, Andrew Bogut made an All-NBA team last season, and he fell to 5, and it was all because people were worried about his personality. It was the rare, it wasn't like a Sean Williams thing or some of those other guys where it's like, oh, that guy's had some real issues. It was completely 100% teams worried about his personality. And now you look back and you think, like, he definitely should have been one of the top 3 picks, but at the same time, the concerns were valid because he had a lot of issues in Sacramento. And I don't know. How do you feel about that part?
Cousins, I would have a no Cousins rule if I were a GM. And
you're out. You're blind. Blind out.
I wouldn't draft him in the redraftables. I watched enough of those Sacramento games that, you know, and the weird thing is his whole career has been put on hold here for like 2 years. So you don't really know what to make of him or where he's going to be the rest of the way. You know, you hope whatever version of this is that when he comes back, he'd be able to turn it around. But I don't know. Like, to me, there's two versions of basketball people. Those that look at Cousins' stats and say he's awesome, was in a bad situation, and he's really, really great. And then there's people that know what they're talking about. They see his stats, but they watch the things he does in a game. And this is all the Sacramento stuff. And a little bit with New Orleans too, where throughout the game, he makes losing plays. He can put up 20 and 10. His passing is incredible. He can stretch the floor for a big guy. But there's all of these little things that he does in there where he lets himself get taken out of a game emotionally quicker than any basketball player I've ever seen. So I don't care what his numbers are. I've done this rant before, so it's not new for some of you. But I would have a hard time having a guy like that be the focal point of my team. Maybe now as a role guy, as he's older and coming off these injuries, and it's not as big of a deal. But when he was younger and he is putting up all these numbers, but there's no accountability and he's run through a million coaches, it was not something I was a fan of.
I'm going to save my thoughts on him for when he comes up in the draft.
Now you can take him 13th or 14th.
I'll just dash him for later. This is a draft that had Larry Sanders, Jeremy Lin, and Hassan Whiteside.
Hassan Whiteside said he was the best player in the draft.
Well, he was wrong. This was a draft I wrote in the draft diary. Our first 4 GMs on the clock, Ernie Grunfeld, Ed Stefanski, Rod Thorne, David Kahn, or as they're better known, Mount Dunsmore. It's really like an incredible quartet to start an NBA draft. All four of those guys, I'm not sure they worked again after this. This also had Khan taking Wes Johnson, who was 23 years old at the draft over Cousins. He had averaged 16 points a game as a 22-year-old junior. And the irony of it is whether that was the right pick or not, going smaller versus taking Cousins, he ends up taking Wes Johnson over two guys coming after who are both going to go in the top four of our redraft. So that happened. John Thompson did this draft. He defended Cousins as a top five pick by saying, quote, "You can calm down a fool before you could resurrect a corpse." Whoa. I'm going to read that to you again.
Yeah.
"You can calm down a fool before you can resurrect a corpse." This was his defense of DeMarcus Cousins going in the top five. He was defending him. So that was, I think, the only time the word fool has ever been used to defend somebody as a top five pick. And then the ESPN graphics guy gave Cousins, quote, "must improve maturity." I would say we still might be there with that. John Wall is the number one pick. I wrote at the time, on the coming into the league can't miss point guard scale, I have Wall ranked behind 94 Jason Kidd and 08 Derrick Rose, but ahead of 05 Deron Williams, who's really good. I got to say, that was a pretty accurate analysis, right? I think he was never going to be Jason Kidd or anybody on that level, but he had a chance to be a very good point guard, which is what he became before he got hurt.
Does that include Chris Paul? Like, are you saying he's better than, or you just didn't name him?
I didn't name Chris Paul. To me, Chris Paul, Jason Kidd are like on that high level coming. When they were coming to the league, I was like, I bet my life those guys are going to be good. I would say that's the highest level.
You know, we were talking about Westbrook and his athleticism and realizing that that's kind of where this game is going with the Rose thing. I think the Wall line is like, that's the exact same thing with him. We know we'd like him to shoot it a little bit better, a lot better, actually. But his athleticism, ability to get to the hoop, and he started developing that kind of, you know, drive, hard drive, elbow jumper. And I feel like I'm this huge John Wall fan, but I feel like it's worth pointing out, like, that people talk about this guy like he sucks now, and it's just not fair. Am I right in that? Because I feel like he gets trashed regularly, and I guess it's probably because of the contract, but.
It's definitely because of his contract.
Yeah.
Two things on John Wall. In person, incredible. Just his speed. One of the fastest guys I've ever seen. We were talking about in a previous redraftable is the athleticism of Westbrook and Rose and how stupendous it was to watch. Wall's speed of just, you know, rebound, outlet, he's just off, is among the fastest players I've ever seen in person. I don't know who's number one, but he's has to be in the conversation of four or five fastest guys I've seen. Oh, so fast that it almost seemed like it was too fast. Like he would have moments where he like literally couldn't control his speed. He was going faster than you should go on a court. And I think the 2017 Wizards, that game, that great series against the Celtics, the game seven, all that stuff. And he fell a little bit short. Bradley Beal ended up kind of being the guy in that. If you were really watching that series closely, it was clear Beal was kind of the guy. And Wall was really good. But the fact that he couldn't shoot threes in a playoff series, in a round two, you could defend him. As long as you cut him off before he got the head of steam and you actually put him in a half-court offense, I don't feel like he ever saw that piece fully as a basketball player.
Yeah, and that's a bad loss. It's not the magnitude of that playoff series isn't something that most people are just walking around like, hey, remember that Wizards series? But that's a bad series loss. They were a better team. They should have beat that Celtics team.
Was that 18 or 17?
I think it's going to be 17.
Yeah,
right? It was Isaiah 17. Thomas.
Yep.
That's a bad. And that Wizards team started to bug me a little bit because they were always doing like these tough guy press conferences. And they dress for a funeral and they do all this stuff. And you'd be like, all right, cool. Like,
you've won one playoff series.
Yeah, you guys ever going to get to the third round or what?
Yeah, settle down. I enjoyed that team, though. And those games were really fun. And Wall was really fun to watch.
That's a great series. That's a sneaky series. Yeah.
I do think he had a hole in his game though. I think that the way the Celtics defended him, and especially in that game seven, and it got to the point where you're kind of rooting for him to take the 24 footer. They were just giving it to him. They were playing way off him. They're like, dude, shoot away. We're giving it to you. And he didn't want to shoot it. Even if you look at his career stats, like, you know, he's like a 32% career 3-point shooter. So I think when he comes back and figures out whatever this next incarnation of his career is going to be, I think he's going to have to shoot better. Quickly, everyone blew it on Paul George. That was another subject in there. And as you said, it was totally defensible. I think this is the problem with the redraftables is if he had gone eighth, I think that would have seemed weird. You know, if like the Clippers had taken him, be like, whoa, taking Paul George eighth? Who? But in retrospect, they should have. OKC made a big... So OKC is in here, and they almost beat Dallas in the playoffs. And this is a draft where they have some assets. They had Mo Peterson's expiring contract. They had 21 and they had 26. And they trade up to New Orleans for Cole Aldridge. Everything is good on paper with that deal. You always want to trade up. You package two worst picks for a better pick. Everything's great except the Cole Aldridge part. And then they took Eric Bledsoe later and traded the rights to him to the Clippers. So this was Sam Presti's first fuck-up draft.
It was like I can't believe it. Yeah, Bledsoe, that surprised me that he was around that long.
Oh, yeah. He was too athletic.
And that was, I think Olshay was still with the Clippers then.
Yep.
When they did that. And they were pumped. They were so pumped when they got him there. Because, you know, Kevin Serafin, who I had some hope for. Luke Babbitt, my guy. I even did a full, you know, I did a full feature for ESPN.com on Luke Babbitt.
Was it about how bad he was defensively?
No, it was going to be that if he had played it. I had a scout who was really big on him. He said if he played at UNC, it'd be like a top five pick.
Oof.
Yeah, didn't quite work out. Epi Udo, who was like 37 at Baylor. And that was one of those are the analytic guys that are like, look, history tells us you're this old, you can't shoot, and you're like a little undersized for your position. It doesn't really work out. And it didn't work out for him almost immediately.
I feel like that was one of the last years where guys like that went in the top 10. After 30 years of missing on guys like that, I think the league finally realized, like, oh, maybe don't take that guy sixth.
it's true because you know, like, that's where the numbers guys were losing their minds with people. To be like, it's, you know, for all the things that we can debate, right? The thing that doesn't ever seem to be debatable is that when you're extra old coming in and there's already some problems, like, you don't just become this guy who's like awesome at 24.
And you have no offensive game. Like, yeah, you're not going to develop a low post game at age 28. Two other trades. Chicago traded the 17th pick to Washington with Kirk Heinrich in return for cap space because they thought they had a chance to get LeBron and Bosh. So that was a bummer. And then there was a crazy Ryan Gomes, Luke Babbitt for Martell Webster trade between Minnesota and Portland. I feel like everybody lost that one. From a comedy standpoint, the highlight of the draft was Mark Jones interviewing Wesley Johnson, asking him what his former Syracuse teammate, Johnny Flynn. Mark Jones says, "What did Johnny tell you about Minnesota?" And Wesley Johnson's answer was, "I mean, he loved it. Minnesota won 17 games the year before and ran the triangle. And by all counts, it was the unhappiest team ever. And it was in fucking Minnesota." Wesley Johnson's like, "I mean, he loved it." I don't think he loved it, Wesley. I don't think that was his reaction. What pick do you want? One or two?
I'll take one.
All right. I'm going to start us off. The 2010 NBA redraftables. Ryan Russillo is on the clock with our first pick.
Well, it's Paul George. And there's no debate, right?
Any follow-up thoughts on Paul George?
You wanted me to add a little more depth to this?
Yeah, give him a little sugar.
No, that's fair. That's totally fair. First year in the league, 8 points a game. You know, they didn't play him a lot. He missed some games as well. We had talked about this team too, because I think that was still a Granger year, right? When
Granger was really good, yeah.
Yeah,
Granger was really good.
It was kind of this weird deal where you weren't quite sure what you had. And so for him, like his improvement, it's a little Kawhi-esque in that you don't really have guys that do this. Like, oh, okay, yeah, maybe he's going to be a nice little role player. Oh, okay, wow, he's going to get 20 a game. Okay, he might be. And at the peak of Paul George, he was in the argument as like the second best player in the league. And that may have been off. It's easy to sound like all this stuff is, you know, oh, that's ridiculous. He was never that good. He's taken some dings too, because you feel like, you know, if it's a final possession in a big playoff spot, do you expect that shot to go down for Paul George right now? Like, I feel like there's been more instances of like him maybe not entirely getting it. And then the fact that, you know, he doesn't go to LA, he goes to Oklahoma City, tells everybody he loves Oklahoma City, and then he forces his way out of there a year later and he ends up with the Clippers. And who knows, he still may win a title throughout all of this, but that arc does not happen a lot.
And it was the case for the Celtics not trading Jaylen Brown, because if you thought Jaylen had a chance to be as good as Paul George, he matched up statistically every checkpoint Paul George hit those first couple years. I'm going back to when he was a rookie, though, when he was 8 points a game. I remember going to a Clipper game. I think it was his rookie year. It was one of his first 2 years. It was whatever the first time I saw him in person. And he's one of those guys where, you know, on TV, people look one way, but in person, you go, oh, man, I didn't know.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like, he seems like he's a legit 6'9". He's got long arms. He's upright and just seems like a specimen. Like if you just landed from another country and you were just picking out who are the best players in this game, you would have picked him. And he was like 20 at that point, but you could see it. And then I remember the 2012 playoffs when they really threw him in the fire against that Miami team during Miami's first title year. Athletically, he could hang with Wade and LeBron, and he had no idea what he was doing yet. And so at some point in those first 2 years, it became clear everybody had made a massive mistake. But you know, you look at his career, he made a first team All-NBA in 2019 during a season that had LeBron, Kawhi in Toronto, and Kevin Durant in Golden State, who was really good that year. So really impressive. And then he also made 4 third team All-NBAs. So last 5 years, 24-7-4. And I think the big thing we have to mention is just the what if with the broken leg, because he basically he loses a whole year and he's not quite the same the year that he comes back and just what his stats would look like and things like that. So,
I mean,
you could argue.
Bill, he came in that first year, like he doesn't rebound. Again, it's only 21 minutes a game. He's not really even shooting. He's just under 30% from three. The next year he comes back. They're still not even playing him 30 minutes a game in his second year in the shortened season. And he's at 385 from three. And then he starts rebounding like crazy. And
right.
You know, then I don't think he's your one. I don't think he could ever be your one. Like physically, he has the game of the one. He has the skills of the one, all of those things. I think there's something that's a little short there as far as you being the guy that's going to really be an alpha in a big moment. I don't know that he has that. And he's shown more times than
I don't think he's a good enough playmaker. I think he's an incredible athlete and an incredible all-around player. I think if you're going to say, what's this guy missing? There's that one last time. I'm talking like super duper stars. There's that one last piece.
Right.
Could you run the offense through him in a game 7? I don't think so.
No,
I mean, you could. I don't know if you'd win.
No, and it's not. This is just as you said. I'm glad you said it that way, because you know when you start talking about who are the 4 or 5 best in the world, like the things we're going to start grading you a little harder on are going to seem like pretty hard, but he has a little Bosh in him where in a big playoff moment, I could forget, you know, like, oh, that's Paul George, like has gone 6-7 possessions here and nothing's really happened.
On the other hand, he's at the point of his career where he could have completely changed your mind on that in these playoffs and still might. And when we go to the Orlando bubble, like who knows, he might have his moment. I still think he's young enough to change that. Awesome defensive player. I don't feel like he's quite at the Kawhi, Scottie Pippen, Iguodala level, but I think he's a notch below. I think he's right underneath those guys for guys I've seen perimeter guys defensively. So he's a worthy number one pick.
I do like that you were like, any follow-up?
But you're just like, Paul George, I'm out. Meanwhile, David Stern's sitting there waiting for the handshake. All right. I'm on the clock, number two. Obviously, I'm taking DeMarcus. No, I'm kidding. I think John Wall has to be the second pick. I was all prepared to get crazy and take Gordon Hayward. But I think the fact that John Wall hit a point where he was a meaningful point guard on a team that almost made the conference finals. And, you know, I don't think it's his fault that Washington, he walks into that Washington situation. It's post Arenas Crittenden, Andre Blatch.
Fool.
Just a complete mess.
JaVale McGee, Jordan Crawford.
All those dudes. And then, you know, as House pointed out when we were talking about Washington and a couple podcasts ago, like, it was a team that always thought they were one move away from winning the title and was giving away number one picks for guys that didn't really matter. And it was always a speed rush microwave kind of game plan for how to put together a team. They really lucked out with the Bradley Beal pick in 2012. And you just think like, all right, freeze the roster right there. 2012. We have John Wall. And we have Bradley Beal. This is easy. Just don't fuck this up. Like that. Don't try to make this all, and that's what they did for the next 5-6 years. And I can't blame him for that. I can't blame him for his knee injury, whether that would have happened or not. Who knows? But, you know, he's career 19-9, 4 rebounds a game. The percentages aren't awesome, but they won a couple playoff series with him. And I do think, for eye test wise, going to see him in person, I thought he was really good. I would just rather have him than Hayward is what it came down for me.
Yeah, I've done all my Wall stuff, and I actually still hold out hope that he's going to be able to have some second part of his career here where he's still young enough after this kind of injury and he's not too big, you know, that he'll be able to figure out something here. I mean, what are we talking? He's 29. He'll be 30 in September. So.
Tough knee injury, though. I mean, it definitely was.
I thought it was the Achilles, no?
I'm sorry, Achilles. Yeah. But he also had a knee injury, too. Didn't he have microfracture surgery? Both of them.
I don't know. I knew there was another significant knee injury. My microfracture update, I don't have my catalogs up to date on that.
In the playoffs, I think this says it all. 22-10 in the playoffs. And he's played, you know, 6 playoff series at this point. Percentages 42-27-82. It's a 27% 3-point shooter in the playoffs, and you could feel it in big games. And I just hate when one of my 2 best players has a weakness that the other team can craft a whole defense around. And that was the case with John Wall. If you could slow the Wizards down when they're going really well and make him a half court point guard, he couldn't totally figure it out sometimes. He did make a third team All NBA. So I think he's certainly wasn't a bust. I think he's had some good moments, and I'm like you. I'm not ready to give up on him. Who are you taking third?
I'm going to go with Hayward then. He was so good towards the end there in Utah. His career has been completely derailed here, and he did look like he was finally figuring out certain times this year, and then I thought it actually got worse again at times.
Me too.
All over the place. But, you know, as we're doing these redraftables with these classes, again, it can seem crazy that it's 10 years ago, but I'm not ready to give up on Gordon Hayward being a productive basketball player in the league either. And once he showed that playmaking where they were running the offense through him in Utah, where he was making the decisions, he was putting up good assist numbers and he could shoot it. And I mean, the thing that sucks too is he played all the time. Like he just missed his handful of games. But I mean, he had one year where he was 16-5-5 and he's shooting. Well, that year was weird. He's had like 40% years from three, and then he'll have like a couple bad years. It's actually a little bit like we were talking about with him in college. But,
last 3 Utah years, he was 25-4, 45-37-83 percentages. So that's good. I mean, you take that. I always thought he was a really smart defender. I don't think he was like an amazing defender, but we even watched him on the Celtics. He's one of those guys who knows where to go, what to do. Seems like he's fun to play with, unselfish. And the ankle thing, you know, we talked about it earlier, the what ifs of this draft with the Paul George, him getting hurt, John Wall getting hurt, Cousins when he got hurt. And then that Hayward injury is just, the timing of it's unbelievable. It's because there's a whole bunch of repercussions from it, including like, does that change the arc of what happens with Kyrie in Boston? Is that Celtics team awesome that season? And is Kyrie happy, or was Kyrie destined to do whatever he was going to do anyway? But
yeah, I think he was going to do whatever he was going
to
do.
Well, maybe, but to lose Hayward after, what was it, an hour?
Not even. No.
It's kind of unbelievable. When has that ever happened before? They lose him in an hour. He's a max contract.
Yeah. Anyway. Like I think there's just always these anti-Ainge people that are out there, but you just go, everybody would have signed Gordon Hayward. Okay, everybody would have signed Gordon Hayward. He's 22 a game. He could shoot, get you boards, get you assists, and he was 26 years old. Like, I don't want to hear about it. And so I would rather have his stability than, say, you know, some of the other guys that we're going to pick from here. DeMarcus Cousins is a more talented player, but I'll take Hayward and not being somebody who can maybe sabotage my entire team.
Well, DeMarcus isn't falling further than four, just for the integrity of this draft. I'm taking him fourth. You told me not to mention the numbers. I'm going to mention the numbers. From 2014 to 2017, four-year stretch, he averaged 25 and 12. He made two second-team All-NBAs. And I do think him and Davis in 2018, that was really happening. That was a really fun team to watch. I loved watching them together, and I really felt like Cousins was starting to figure it out as nutty as he's been over the course of his career. Him and Davis together were figuring it out in a real way with Drew Holiday. That team was something. And so that makes me think, all right, this violates a lot of my rules for the redraftables, but at least I saw for 4 months there that this guy could be a productive player and a good team. So I'm taking him.
Yeah, and maybe if he's not the guy that he was in Sacramento earlier on, then he can have a nice little second half. You worry with the Achilles, somebody this big, and then he hurts himself again after the Achilles because that's what happens. But the guy that got 25 and 10 or whatever in Sacramento, but then if he didn't get a call, spent the next five possessions distracted within the game, not paying attention to anything that was going on, then he'd elbow somebody.
Not running back.
He wouldn't get back on defense, or he wouldn't. If he didn't get the ball off a screen, he would pout for five possessions. And then as soon as he got the ball back again, he'd just take a bad shot to take the shot. Like, that doesn't show up as much in the box score, but that's why, I'm not telling you that Sacramento team was loaded and he necessarily, we get that that was not a good basketball team, but I will argue with anyone that wants to listen, because I think there are people that have never really, that have been pro DeMarcus Cousins that just haven't really been honest with themselves about some of the stuff that he does that screws up your team.
Well, it's a good one, because as the years pass and your basketball reference page becomes your legacy for people who weren't there when you played, because we're seeing that happen with guys from my generation, your generation too, where you can make a case now that Karl Malone was one of the 10 best players of all time. Like, wow, look at his basketball reference page. And as everybody gets older, who can't be like, hold on a second, I was there. This is how it actually happened. And with Cousins, there's somebody 30 years from now be like, hey, you know who was one of the best three centers of the 2010s? DeMarcus Cousins. And they'll lay out a statistical case for it. And it won't be a good one. I'll just say that one. I mean, when you're a center and you're only shooting 46%, but you're allegedly this awesome post-up player, like, go look at the post-up stats of everyone from the 80s and 90s who, you know, even somebody like Ewing, for him to shoot 46% in a year would have been a complete disaster for him. So, I think, though, I wanted to play this game with you because I do think he went to one of the worst possible teams for him. Best team DeMarcus could have gone to, not counting Washington, because they were taking John Wall either way. So let's say Philly takes him at number two. You're putting him with Drew Holiday, Lou Williams, Iguodala, Elton Brand, Lil Spencer Hawes, plus Doug Collins coming in. Does Doug Collins and DeMarcus, they fight to the death?
To the death. Somebody, Doug.
Somebody dies.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the most fun situation. Number three was the Nets. So New Jersey, before they got to Brooklyn, they had nobody. I think that would have been just as bad as Sacramento. Minnesota, him and Kevin Love together. There's so many ways that could have gone wrong. There's a couple ways it could have gone right. Golden State, he could end up with Curry and Clay a year later, potentially. And then after that, it gets silly, like Detroit, the Clippers, stuff like that. The thinking of DeMarcus in Philly is delightful to me. I wish that had happened. I really would have liked that. I think the fans either would have embraced him or turned on him in a way that was almost unprecedented.
See, I think they would have liked him. I think they would have liked him because, well, I don't know. It's a smart basketball town. I mean, Sacramento defended him to, like, you know, and him losing his coach. I mean, I've read that piece so many times. Like, wow, you know, he was never told about Coach Moore not being there. Like, oh, okay, so that's
so then he gets bit dick for 7 years.
Right? Yeah, he could just, hey, I was given a heads up. So,
I'm more pro Boogie than you are, yes. But I think he got away with a lot of stuff too. I just think you put a guy like that who could go either way, and you put him on the worst organization in the league. On bad teams with guys like Tyreke Evans and whoever else. And it's like, it's not going to work. There's no way.
And maybe with the Garnett, you're right. Maybe that would have been amazing to have somebody like that. Like, I would have paid Garnett $5 million a year if I were Sacramento at the end of his career, just to be like, can you come in here and yell at Cousins?
Hmm.
All right. Now we're at number five, and a little bit of a drop off from this point on. And then there's another drop off that's honestly like the floor caves and you just go crashing into the basement. But this is the first drop off. Who do you have at five?
It really was Bledsoe or Favors. And I think I'm going to go Bledsoe. Mm. And that's
where I had him too.
The high end scoring. Like, you can look at Favors and go, hey, you know, that's not that bad. Like, look at it all. It's not that bad. I just wanted it to be better. So maybe that's getting in the way of all of this. But really, between the two, late possession type of thing, Favors probably wouldn't even be in the play. And Bledsoe has a chance of getting you the bucket, even though, you know, look, I'm not putting Bledsoe in the top 10 of point guards in the league. But I kind of went back and forth on it, but I felt like, you know what, Bledsoe just gives me more scoring.
In the draft, in the moment, the Celtics had the 19th pick, and heading into the 18th pick, Bledsoe and Avery Bradley were on the board. And I remember being excited because all these teams fucked up in front of that spot, right? Like, we went, Serafin was the 17th pick to Chicago. Bledsoe, you just knew at the worst case scenario is going to be a really good athlete who could be your third guard. And then Bradley the year earlier was the number one high school recruit and had gone to Texas and he hadn't had a great year. And it was the classic, people just fell off him. And I think that's been one of Ainge's secret scouting tricks. He likes the pedigree of those McDonald All-American guys sometimes, and sometimes too much. But I got to watch Bledsoe those first couple years with the Clippers, and it was clear that he was something, you know, and athletically, he was a little bit too heat-checky and like overconfident in his own offensive abilities to run a team. And I think that's manifested itself in some bad ways with Milwaukee last season. But the talent was there. It was undeniable. Like, he was really athletically gifted and seemed like he gave a shit, played hard, and was in a frustrating spot, like backing up Chris Paul. Like, who's a worse person to back up than Chris Paul? You're only going to play 12
Peyton
minutes
Manning.
A game. Yeah, baby. You're playing 12 minutes a game. If you're playing with him, he's yelling at you. Like, that, not ideal. And I think it hit a point where he had to find his own team. And then finally they traded him to Phoenix and his career took off. I was not surprised. I think that's the right pick.
Okay.
Number six. I had Bledsoe at five, so you took him. I had Favors at six just because I know what he is. And by all accounts, great teammate. I think if you do his career over again, he's an 11-7 for his career. I think if you do it over again, it probably turns out differently. He just, you know, he ends up, gets taken by the Nets. That's terrible. Gets traded to Utah. He's in the Deron Williams trade. He's playing without Jefferson. They're kind of remaking what that team is. And it was like, they never totally figured him out, but he was one of those guys that I always kept waiting. Didn't you always keep waiting for it to happen with him?
Oh, my God. Dude, like, are you kidding? Like, if I have a a biography written about me. It'll be like, he always hoped for more from Derek Favors. Like, I loved him so much at Georgia Tech because it just, I thought he was going to be this physically imposing, like high twitch big guy. You know, I'm not saying he was going to be LeBron, but I thought the way he was end to end.
And then I thought, he just kind of turned. Didn't you think like Antonio McDice? Like that?
Maybe not
like
peak athlete, but yeah, more along those lines.
Something like that.
This guy
right?
could really take over a game. And I judge him. I judge him based on thinking that he was always supposed to be a little bit more. And then finally, with him, I had to be like, "All right, dude, it's not happening." You know, baseline jumpers going to get you some boards, and that's about it. So,
in 15 and 16, those 2 years, he averaged 16 and 8, 52% shooting. You know, the league moved against him a little bit.
Yeah,
I think he's a guy that made a lot more sense 20 years ago than maybe.
Totally. He looks like an 80s power forward, doesn't he?
Yeah. And then in 17 and 18, they make the second round both years. He's placed 20.5 minutes a game the first year, 26 the second year. But one of those guys, I think we all liked him, and he had a great name. Derek Favors just sounds like he should be awesome. There was a high school pedigree with him. And I haven't given up on him yet. Like if he averages 25 and 12. Oh, give up. It's over?
It's over.
Dude, if he averages 25-12 next year, I'm like, I fucking told you Derek Favors. Now, I don't, I'm with you. I think he is what he is now. He is like the smart forward off the bench who can guard two positions and play 20 minutes a game for you. I wanted more. Yeah. You're on the clock at 7.
There's analytics guys here that will tell you some of my next picks are coming up that are going to be wrong, but I don't care. I don't care what the analytics say in some of these because I'm just going with a guy. As far as having in my rotation now at pick 7, I'm going to take Avery Bradley.
Mm. I also had him at number 7.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
This is funny. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Incredible defensive player for, you know, 5-6 years there. I thought he was a destructive player that, you know, I always thought he was a guy that he's a shooting guard on offense, but on defense, you want him guarding the other team's point guard. So if you could find, you know, a point forward or a two guard who's really a playmaker on the offensive end and have Bradley kind of play off that guy, he could be really valuable. What he wasn't was a point guard. He could barely dribble.
That's what people don't seem to remember, or they just haven't watched enough of him. Do you remember that Knicks series where he was trying to bring the ball up? Like the Celtics are trying to have him play point guard.
Yeah.
And it was like, whoa, this guy kind of can't dribble. Like there's different kinds of dribbling. You can dribble on your way to getting a bucket. Okay, fine. But like, can you actually in the face of pressure, like navigate through everybody? And some guys get exposed a little bit with that. And it's also a little scary that at the beginning, it's like, okay, this guy, this isn't some amazing draft pick by Ainge in that, This is somebody who shouldn't have fallen this far because it took a little while, but he has moments. And yeah, the fact that you can probably play him in different positions defensively and, you know, whatever. He wasn't great in Boston. I think you'd be the first to admit that. I think people in Boston held out hope for him quite a bit. He's had some moments with the Lakers here this year.
Can I shout out his 2017 season really fast?
Please.
16 and 6, 6 rebounds. 39% from 3, 5 threes a game. Really good defense and played really nicely with Isaiah Thomas, where he basically had to guard the best guard on the other team every game. And Isaiah, they would try to hide him on whoever. But I like that backcourt together. I don't think it was sustainable. It wasn't a championship backcourt, but Avery Bradley was good. He played in some playoff games over the years, and I liked having him out there. I was never one of those guys where you're like, oh man, Avery Bradley's out there. Like I actually kind of believed him. And I think, you know, he decided not to play in the bubble. I think he really could have helped the Lakers.
Yeah, that's the loss.
In certain situations, right?
Totally.
Not like every series, but there were moments in over 4 rounds where you needed him. In 2017, 18 playoff games, and he was 17 a game playing 36 minutes a game for a team that, you know, made the conference finals. So, you could argue he should have gone 6th. All right, I'm on the clock at 8. The wheels have come off again. The wheels have come off to the point that I'm taking Greg Monroe.
Whoa, and you hate Greg Monroe.
Yeah, I don't even really like him.
Great in the 80s. Would have been great.
Yeah, and I always thought he was a good passer.
He is.
I liked his offensive game, and I liked when they would put him at the top of the key and run people off picks and stuff.
Yeah, he's really good.
The thing with him. From 2012 to 16, he averaged 16 and 10. So I would rather have that than anybody we're about to pick. I do think there was a time and a place for him. I think as the league got smaller and smaller and he did not have the ability to just punish people anymore and things like that, he became unplayable. But at least for those 5 years, he was something. So that's better for me than anyone else in this draft. Who are you taking at 9?
I'm going to take Ed Davis.
Oh. Wow, we really fell off. What's your case for Ed Davis, just out of curiosity?
I don't know that I have one. It's not scoring. His rebounding numbers have always been pretty good. It feels like everywhere he goes, everyone's excited that they have him, but then they kind of forget that no one ever wants to keep him. I mean, he's never on a team from, well, he had a couple years there in Portland.
He was a classic Portland guy where the fans were all making it seem like he was better than he was. They've done that to about 20 players over the last 25 years.
Yeah, I wanted role player. I want role player that I know can fit in. I mean, I'm at the stage of my scouting here where I'm trying to find out if somebody like an only child or where they buy their jeans. But, you know, I'm just making sure that we have everybody on the same page.
Strong pick. I am going completely off the grid with the 10th pick, taking a guy who was not drafted.
Pop C?
Wait,
he was drafted. He was drafted.
A guy who caused a riot in 2012 for about 4 weeks. A guy by the name of Jeremy Lin.
Good pick. Good pick.
Thank you. Thanks.
Yeah, I like this a lot. That's good.
Thank you. He was good enough to get signed to a $25 million deal by Houston. They, in the playoff series, you know, everybody thinks Jeremy Lin, it began and end with Lin's sanity and then he gets hurt and it's over. He actually had a really good first year with Houston, where they made the play. They lost that series to Portland to Dame Lillard, remember?
Yep.
Dame Lillard, the three when Parsons didn't follow him over in time. But Lin's playing in crunch time in that game. It was on recently and I was watching and they ran, you know, Harden was doing his usual terrible shots down the stretch, but Lin had a big play at one point and he was out there. So I don't know. I think he got hurt a couple times. He had some bad luck, but as a scoring point guard off the bench, I can't resist him. Plus, he means a lot to a few of my friends. So there you go. Who do you have at number 11? I should tell the audience, we're officially in Hassan Whiteside range. I'm not saying he's going, but
I'm not taking him.
We're at the point where people in the draft room are kind of passing his stats around.
They are, because there's analytics that like him. And some of his total numbers are good. If people are benching you at the end of close games, that tells me something. That's me, you know? I'm difficult that way when your coach doesn't want you out there at the end of close games. Evan Turner has some terrible analytics. Like he's in the 20s for some of these. And I actually think you have to take Evan just on talent alone at this point. I probably should have taken him ahead of Ed Davis. If you've watched enough Evan Turner, you know exactly who he is. But he's still too talented and still had moments of production where he can't go undrafted and a redraftable here. He has to be drafted. So therefore, I take him at number, 11?
One of the great college basketball stat seasons. He was awesome that Ohio State year. So it's funny that the advanced metrics decided not to like him eventually. I thought Stevens unlocked him in Boston, my hero Brad Stevens. The way he used him as like a point forward, whatever the fuck he was, and had guards running off. And I thought he was effective. Like, I think you're totally right. Could he be in a rotation on a really good team? Abso-fucking-lutely, yes.
Right.
And that was the right pick for that spot. So,
do you know what team he's on right now?
He got traded and then traded again. Is he on Sacramento?
Close. He's on the Sacramento of the East, Atlanta.
Oh, there you go. So Whiteside probably should be the next pick, but I know I can get him with the 14th pick because I know you're not going to take him. So I'm going to take a guy I've always enjoyed who seems to keep getting paid and who mailed in the last 2 years about as egregiously as anyone I can remember, Patrick Patterson.
He has to go. He's in my top 14. This is right around the range we had him here over at HQ. So good pick.
37% career three-point shooter, just for the record. Could he be... The model for him was always Big Shot Rob, right? It's like, oh yeah, he could be the Bob Horry of this team. And it except for the talent, everything else was in place. And, you know, could a stretch forward could make some threes and potentially guard people on the other end. That's what you got with Patrick Patterson. So there you go.
He has to go draft. There's no way you can do these 14 without him being drafted. So I agree with you.
You're up at 13.
Okay.
By the way, this might be the grisliest it's gotten in any redraftables for like the last six guys.
If we stopped at 12, I wasn't going to get mad.
If we could have stopped at 8.
I was half expecting you to go, hey, do you want to just stop? Do you want to watch any shows? Shout out to Hightown on Starz.
Oh, yeah, you like episodes. Hightown.
I'm into
P-Town.
It. P-Town.
Yeah, P-Town.
It is funny, though, any mass-based show, the ruling on who says what, like who's allowed to try to speak with the accent. And it's one of my favorite things with any mass show. It's like, who thinks they're killing it? Who's actually good at it? Who just said, I'm not even going to bother.
Right.
But it's always funny. But yeah, P-Town. We used to play P-Town in high school.
Yeah.
That was a long road trip for the Vineyard for the.
Yeah,
for the
seriously. White and that's purple. Like an hour.
Hour. It's longer than that. Because Woods Hole is all the way at the bottom. Inland,
oh, yeah,
almost.
Yeah. Like 2 hours.
And so it's going all the way up and around.
All right. I'll watch P-Town.
Yeah, check it out.
I heard it wasn't a feel-good show, so I stayed away, but I'll check it out.
It isn't, but it's a lot of the same beats, you know, for any kind of drama with crime, but I'm really into how they've done it so far. Like, they've added newer elements to it enough along with the storylines that make me go, all right, cool. Like, I think we have something different on here. All right.
13th pick. You're on the clock.
I'll go Al-Farouq Aminu just based on the Portland years alone. Why?
Because I was going to take him and just not take Whiteside.
So, old Al-Farouq, he a lot of size. He was another big-time high school guy, and that's when Wake ended up with all those dudes over that very short amount of time. It was like, remember when Wake Forest landed everybody there in a very short amount of time? He didn't do much scoring, but then when he got to Portland, he still was young, too. He was 20 when he came into the league. And then you're worried that he's on his 15 by 25.
Well, you know, he started on the Clippers.
Yeah.
And he was an immediate write-off. He was one of those guys you watch twice and you're like, oh, he's a bust. He'll never be good. And I was really surprised when he kind of remodeled his game in Portland and became a 3-and-D guy. You know, not the best version of a 3-and-D guy. Certainly not an awesome three-point shooter, but at least...
He made enough threes, makings. Though.
Yeah.
He was perfect for kind of what they were doing because they had all those different guys. So he actually made sense there. And those 3 years are probably the only reason why, because he didn't do anything with Orlando this year. He didn't play. I mean, he played like 18 games.
Because the Clippers also took that guy, I can't remember what year, the Russian guy that Dunleavy loved. 2008, 2007, yeah. Korolev, yeah. Whatever that guy's name was. He was another one where you watched him for 5 minutes. You're like, oh, he sucks. He'll never be good. Like, you knew immediately. And I felt that way about Al-Farouq Aminu. I thought there was no chance. But it turned out there was a chance. All right, I have the last pick. Pick 14. Here's who's on my board. Hassan Whiteside. Jordan Crawford. King of the heat check. Boban. Get some Boban out of this. Quincy Pondexter, who I've never really totally given up on. Grievous Vasquez. And the Larry Sanders Show.
Take
Larry Sanders, you get like 1.5 incredible years where it's like, wow, look at this guy. He's leading the league in blocks. He's so great. I love Larry Sanders. I might end up taking Larry Sanders for all we know. Larry Sanders.
What about Magnum Roll?
What team was he on?
He was from Louisiana Tech.
Yeah, Larry Sanders, 2.8 blocks a game in 2013. I'm going to take Whiteside. I don't feel good about it, but he's 14 and 12. Could I play him, throw him in a game for 15 minutes and have him bump into dudes? It's either him or Boban for me. Boban, is just the fact that he couldn't get off the bench for the Sixers last year when everybody made a big stand. Oh, don't count out Boban. You might see him. And then it was the actual playoff game started. And they were like, yeah, you're going to be over there. You're not playing. Whiteside at least can rebound and potentially block a shot. And
well, he'll block shots. He's just not playing any defense. And I know that sometimes is a hard sentence for people to process, but he True. Only cares about blocking shots. He doesn't care about what he's supposed
that's,
to be
that's
doing.
That's why I said he might block a shot for me. His yeah. guy also might go by him seven times in a row for layups, but he might block a couple shots for me. It's the least inspired I've ever been to take a pick in a redraftables, but I'm taking him. Hassan Whiteside, 14th pick. This draft was bad. This draft actually made me feel bad about doing the redraftables again. I'm soured.
Honestly, in the show note, I was shocked we were doing it.
Well, it fit in the summer 2010 theme. And what the fuck else are we going to talk about?
Oh, no, I'm not criticizing any of us in the content game right now. Trying to figure these things out. But I was like, oh, we're going to do 10? All right, that's cool. We'll do it.
It's rough. Certainly not a lot of, at least the Cam Newton thing happened.
Yeah, the Cam thing is big news. You guys are excited. Ben Simmons is going to get a new jersey.
Got a lot of texts. Yeah. There you go. All right, Russillo, you got at least one podcast this week coming?
Yeah, we're going to do some NFL stuff. I don't want to say what we're doing yet, but Dan Heron was great, though.
Yeah.
You want to check out Dan Heron, who works with the Arizona Diamondbacks now, pitching the bigs like 13 years. He was good. And he's funny, too, talking about drilling guys. So
I like that guy. All right, cool. Have a good week. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Book of Basketball podcast. Stay tuned for more shows on this feed.